is the Alien UFO Podcast, Extended Episode 77, and I'm your host, Simon Bowen. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And every Thursday, I release an episode of the Past Lives Podcast called Paranormal Stories, and that has UFO cases as well as information on evidence of an afterlife. If you want to hear the extended version of this interview, you'll need to join the Patreon campaign, where there are now over 70 episodes in the back catalogue. For $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week, and for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. This week, I'm talking to Paula Harris about her book, Connecting the Dots, Making Sense of the UFO Phenomena. Paula has extensive knowledge on the subject of UFOs. She has studied unidentified aerial phenomena since 1979 and is on personal terms with leading researchers in the field. From 1980 to 1986, Dr. J. Allen Hynek entrusted her with his UFO investigations outside the United States, and she has published interviews of many military witnesses concerning their experiences. Hi, Paula. Thanks for coming back to the podcast.
Well, thank you for inviting me. There's a lot going on right now in the UFO field, so I think it's very timely.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, actually. Is he a guy that no one's really ever heard of before, and he's saying that the US has crashed discs?
I think what's happening, it was on the debrief, if people want to get the whole entire story, and you may want to put it on your website. But what's happening is people that have been working in these black projects are coming forth. They're getting tired of keeping it secret. I mean, they've had it. It's years now that a lot of people in secret projects know that not only are there UFOs, there is an industrial whole business. The industrial military complex has been back engineering the technology, including free energy technology. And the Earth is in such a disarray right now that we could use some of these technologies. And of course, I will say that the debrief article mentions the man that came out to talk about this. And he is willing to go public. So everybody in the world jumped on this case. It's like, anytime anything comes out of the government, it's like the latest flavor of ice cream. I always notice, though, Simon, there has to be agenda around it. In other words, they're not doing it only because of the kindness of their heart. The agenda could be, in the case of Lou Elizondo, he became a media star, or the agenda could be that it's sponsored by the government as a possible threat. So then we can get money appropriations the way Marco Rubio and Senator Gillibrand are talking. This is a possible threat. We need to prepare for an alien invasion. There is always an agenda. I never look at it when it comes out of those venues as from the kindness of your heart. However, I was completely dumbfounded yesterday when I listened to the Stephen Greer press conference in Washington, because that didn't have an agenda. That was these poor whistleblowers, and some of them were medically, and medically challenged and threatened, and really led dangerous lives, coming forth because they trusted Dr. Greer in an event that was in Washington, D.C. yesterday at the Washington Press Club, one right after another, and really brought tears to the eyes of the audience, because there was no agenda there. What was there was, we're telling you, let's get on this. This is, it has ruined my life, and I'm willing to come forth with nothing, because that's all volunteer. Even all of Stephen Greer's work and workers, because I know them. I helped him with the first disclosure project in 2001. I helped him from Italy with all the witnesses. Those are all volunteers coming forth and saying, look, I worked in these programs. UFOs are real. We even have contact. There are bodies. Now, what do you want to do about it? So may I encourage everybody that's listening right now to go on Facebook and look at the Dr. Greer disclosure event of June 13th.
Do you think that since 2001 progress has been made, or is it just not really struck the people who have the authority to do disclosure? They just ignore it, and there's no progress since 2001?
Well, it depends on how you define progress. If defining progress means it's okay to talk about it and nobody's going to laugh because it comes out of government disclosure, yes, absolutely, progress has been made on it. If you mean progress, are we doing something about it? The answer is no. They know. Everybody's talking about having hearings and so forth. But as far as moving fast enough on this, I don't think they're moving fast enough on it, because the implications of the technology that's been hidden could save the planet from not only energy problems, but starvation. I mean, there's all kinds of things that come out of the disclosure of this. It changes everything. It changes everything. And when I say it's okay to talk about it, I always give the personal story of my kids, because they didn't want to talk about what I was doing for years. And I'm an investigative journalist. And all of my interviews are in my books, like Connecting the Dots, that was just re-released right now. And they're all military people and intelligence people and astronauts and people that have been telling me these things. Well, my kids didn't want to deal with it until the New York Times came out with the story. When the New York Times came out with the story, then they said, Mom, this is real. And I said, what did you think? But it has to come from the media, otherwise they don't think. And Simon, I'm going to ask you, has your podcast or your conversations changed since you heard about all the disclosure from the government?
I can't say that they have. But, you know, I'm living on the south coast of England, and I don't know anybody who's interested in this subject. And, I talk to a guy called Matt Roberts. He was a guest on the podcast. He was the intelligence officer on the USS Roosevelt when one of those films was filmed. And I don't think I would have got to interview him before all that stuff came out.
Okay, but how did you feel when you interviewed him? Did it change your paradigm?
No, I from decades ago, I've been reading about this, and I feel I have an understanding, but no, it didn't change my paradigm. When I saw that stuff come out with the films and the Pentagon releasing it, and I just thought it was like, oh yeah, okay, yes, what else is new? I already know about the government having this sort of information.
Yeah, no, I understand it. And mine was okay, except that it was okay to talk about. In other words, it was okay to talk about it more and to be credible. I think I've always been credible because I'm not a ufologist. I'm an investigative journalist. I'm like the Lois Lane of Clark Kent, and so for me, it's been data collecting. It's been my books, and I have 6 books, including conversations with Colonel Corso, where he told me I had a tape recorder in my pocket, and he told me about his whole career in the 1960s in the Pentagon under General Trudeau when he was given artifacts. This is the 1960s. In the name of the army. And since I was the journalist to bring him to Europe, I have that book called Conversations with Colonel Corso, where he told me everything, including that they had bodies. In the book, there's an autopsy report and all this. And we're talking 1960, we're in 2023. So anytime I talk to anybody, I even mentioned it to Chris Mallon, I said, you guys are looking at Tic Tacs, looking at the graph just, that's been going on forever. Aren't you interested in what's inside?
Yeah, there was that researchers decades ago, it was almost like they wouldn't discuss who might be piloting the craft because that was just going too far. They wanted to know about the craft and the mechanics and maybe how they worked. But they thought if they start talking about the occupants, then they would really seem crazy. So they refused to talk about it.
Well, what did they think is going on? I mean, just if you use logic, you know, I mean, the word is common sense. If you use common sense, what did they think? They're being remote controlled from something? If you please, everybody, listen to Dr. Greer's, press conference, because three of those guys were involved in making UFOs for the military. So now we got the complication of not knowing if it's our stuff or their stuff. So, you know, our stuff causes problems. Our stuff doesn't work really well. They talked about the Cash Landham case where they were testing our stuff and it caused problems of radiation. That was, I think, in the 1980s. And hurt some people. And logically, you're going to try to back engineer that because that is, whatever that is flying among the stars. And we can't get there. We can't do that. We're not at that point yet. So if there, and there are crashes, there are so many. In fact, the whistleblower on the debrief, his last name is Grash, he talked about the having crashed saucers and having seen them. So, okay, so we've got them. So what do you do with them? Are you going to throw them in the trash and just say, oh yeah, that's nice? Or are you going to see how it works? And if you listen to the whistleblowers that Dr. Greer's event, we have back engineered that stuff for a long time. In other words, when you're looking at a UFO around Las Vegas or around the base there, Nellis, you don't know whether they're testing our stuff or whether the ETs are playing a joke and flying over military installations. What we do know, and this is, you know, I've done extensive interviews here with Robert Salas, who was at Maelstrom Air Force Base in 1969 is the Cold War. And we had 10 missiles in Maelstrom in South Dakota. And they shut off one after another, these balls of light, these craft, these UFOs that scared the living daylights out of the military, because they were on top of the on top of this facility. And Robert Salas, who was in charge of this, was in a bunker underneath the facility in 1969. And these globes of light, these UFOs shut down one right after another. Now, the reason why I'm saying this is data. This you can look up. Robert Salas is still around. And if they're shutting down one right after another, that is more of a warning. If they had destroyed them all, that would have been an act of terrorism or defiance. And we could look at that as dangerous. That's why everybody says, you know, should we look at it as, a threat? Well, if it was a threat, they would have done that in 1969 when we have these nuclear missiles pointing towards Russia. I love that interview. It's on my YouTube, Simon, because later on, after I met Robert Salas in Europe, I said, Did anything happen when you were under the ground in the bunker? And he said, yeah, I heard in my head the words, we can't shut you down. I said, you never talked about that. And he goes, yeah, well, you know, a lot of these people talk about personal contact or personal messages they're getting. So if they can shut us down when we're going to destroy each other, and by the way, we're back in the Cold War, I mean, Russia is the enemy. We're right back where we were in 1969. We're talking about a planet that has not progressed very much.
Well, we're going to talk about the book that you mentioned, Connecting the Dots, Making Sense of the UFO Phenomena. There's a new edition that's a revised edition that's just come out, isn't there?
some new material because I was on a radio show called Coast to Coast, and who called in was the granddaughter of a Kenneth Arnold. For the people that want to study the UFO phenomena, Kenneth Arnold, in June of 1947, saw 9 craft fly over Mount Rainier in Washington State, and he coined the name UFOs. And since it was his family that was calling in, I formed a relationship with her, with Kenneth Arnold's granddaughter. Her name is Chanel Sands. In fact, if people go to my www.starworksusa.com website, they'll realize I'm doing a masterclass with her this Sunday on the 18th. Basically, she and I are going to talk about what happened to her family because they were crucified. They were badgered. They were threatened. They just because her father, who was a pilot and knew what he was doing, reported 9 UFOs. And that started the age of UFOs, because then everybody jumped on it. They were called in those days. We're dealing with 1947. They were called flying saucers. And, you know, I'm going to do a masterclass with her, but the interview of her mom, Kim Arnold, is in my book, Connecting the Dots. And basically, Kim told me that Kenneth Arnold's wife was a medium. She was, in other words, she was very psychic and was getting messages. So if the ET group that was flying over Mount Rainier wanted to choose somebody to open the age of UFOs, we got to remember they picked a pilot who's really credible, but he's also married to a medium who has that consciousness paranormal angle. So that's what Chanel and I talk about, because I almost think that when people get sightings, they're chosen to get them.
And it's a thing where Kenneth Arnold, it's not like he just had that one sighting and then he just got on with his life. He started really looking into it, didn't he? He did a lot of research.
Well, anybody that's had like close contact like that becomes obsessed. And that's the problem. A lot of the people, including a lot of people in Europe, they become obsessed. And what happens is it interferes with their personal life. Because this is something that not all families want to talk about. This is something that takes over. And Kenneth Arnold, in his case, he went on with the research and started researching the Maury Island case that had actual, I think it was sludge artifacts that came out of the UFO. I think the UFO was in trouble and it was spitting out these things. So he went and was working with this. And of course, the intelligence community at that time, if there's a cover up, they're going to either make you look bad, they're going to discredit you, or they're going to stop you from doing the proper research. You know, so in 1947, we had Kenneth Arnold in 1947 with, you know, in June, but we also had Roswell in July, right after that. So, and you know, the Roswell story got in the papers, and you can't put the genie back in the bottle. So in 1947, that before Jacques and my book came out, was the beginning of the UFO age. Then Jacques Vallée and I had started before Jacques, started researching in 1945, which is 1 month after the atomic bomb case in San Antonio, New Mexico, 3 hours away from Well, and found out, because the witnesses were still alive. There's 4 of them, not just 2, not just Jose Padilla. There's 4 witnesses. There were kids at the time. Found out that there was a control crash 13 miles away from when the atomic bomb crashed. And the name of the book is Trinity. It's written by Jacques Vallée and me. And also, it is on Amazon. People can get it on Amazon. And it opened it up to 1945. Now the government is studying 1945 crash, because Those witnesses were there. They saw the beings, and there's still the mark of the UFO on location. Roswell has three miles, you know, Dupree Field. But when we did this, we opened up the UFO case to 1945. Remember, then there's 1947, which had always been the beginning of modern UFO age. May I encourage your listeners to look at things chronologically and to understand that anything that crashes or anything that comes to this planet is not coming on vacation. There is a geopolitical thing happening. 1 month after we explode the atomic bomb, which affects the whole entire planet and other dimensions, that happens. Then, I mean, people, if they start doing their due diligence work, will realize there's UFOs over Ukraine right now. And when I talk to Clifford Stone, and I've been close to him many, many years, he's Crash Retrieval. His book is called Eyes Only. He told me the three of the retrievals were in Vietnam. I don't think that's a place of vacation. So I think that what's happening is that the Earth is being watched, especially for our geopolitical implications to destroy ourselves.
And so with Philip Corso, did he have any proof of any of his claims, or was it all, it just, we have to take him at his word?
Well, no, of course he had proof. In Corso's, you know, declaration to me, the first time that he saw a body was in 1947 coming across Fort Riley, Kansas. So we got his records, his military records, and yes, he was at Fort Riley, Kansas in 1947. And he thinks that body was from Roswell. Yes, he was working at the Pentagon. It's on his military record under General Trudeau. Yes. He said he actually briefed Robert Kennedy. That was the Kennedy years. And then you have to ask a lot of questions about the Kennedys, knowing about UFOs. It opens up really other questions. And then when he confessed to the having of these, and you don't mention General Trudeau's name unless it's real, that he was the last one in command and was supposed to be going to these military industrial complex places like Sperry Rand, and he named them all, American Computer Company, to back engineer this stuff. He told me that it was done in cash, so there would be no paper trail. So that's logical. Now, when the skeptics walked up to him and they said, oh, is this really true? He said, were you there? Did you work in the government? Were you at the Pentagon? I was. And of course he was. I mean, we have military records. This is a man that did it in 1997 to open up the world like today. And so that he could do this for his grandchildren. He had three boys, and I met them, and I've been to their house in Florida. And he said, Paula, I this is very controversial. He said, but I need to tell the truth. And for me, Paula, that was working on why can't people just talk about this, I realized that the secret is being kept secret because of money, because of the military industrial complex. Because of the money, because this is not about ETs, it's not about religion, it's not about all that. There is a tremendous amount since 1945 of technology here that has gone into black projects. And if you want to know more about that, just go on and look at Richard Dolan's research. I mean, he's the ultimate of the ultimate for giving you dates, times, places. Now, Jacques Vallée, that wrote the book with me on 1945 Trinity, he had met with Corso. And he has said he's telling the truth. I said, I know, but it's very difficult to open this up when the secrecy is so hidden.
And talking of secrecy, what Philip Corso did might have broken all sorts of security oaths and telling all this top secret stuff. And I believe, you know, like people in Roswell were threatened that if they told what they saw, they'd be hurt, their families might be hurt. Was there any comeback on Philip Corso?
You know, Simon, I think Colonel Corso did not. I've never been threatened like I was threatened with Corso. Well, Corso could not speak in the United States. So because there was a lawsuit against his co-writer here, and that would shut down everything. So there was no getting on your podcast. There was no getting on podcasts. So we brought him to Italy. We brought him to Italy twice. I was working out of Italy. I was in Italy working 1994 to 2009. And he told everything. And like Stephen Greer says, when you go off the reservation, it's dangerous. And he talked about, you know, what he had done. You know, just to give your audience a feeling of what he had. He told me that he had a pen that looked like a pen. That he said he thought it was a laser, but he put long low waves on it at Fort Belvoir in Maryland, and he realized that a laser came out of it that would cut and also suture. So there's a doctor here in Colorado that contacted him right away. So could we ever use that? It cuts and then it also, you know, sews it up. And he goes, yes. He says, I think the Russians have found something like that also. And he had these things in his hands. He described them perfectly. So the technologies that he had could help humanity. And when I did move back, I kept getting these people, I'm not going to mention their names, who kept coming up to me and saying, don't talk about Corso. Don't talk about Corso. And within 2 years, he was the guy. And I'm thinking, anybody that's that brave. But I'm talking about firsthand sources. I'm not talking about, you know, people to report stories or anything. People who were involved. Because he said, were you there? He'd say, were you there? If you're questioning me, were you at the Pentagon? Can you have a conversation with me? It's the same thing that I tell people when they question any research. I'll say, did you do the research? Were you on location? Did you see the crash site? Did you? Because if they didn't, Simon, then they're making a judgment on opinion. And often the opinion is not informed. It's not informed. I mean, how can I make a judgment on anthropology if I only read my own book? I have to read all anthropology books. So it's very difficult because our own field criticizes and bashes our own field.
Yeah, I've heard that. And sometimes, very occasionally, I've had guests on the podcast, and when we're not recording, they do seem a bit negative about what's going on and other people. And it's not really helping. We need everybody to come together and work together to find out what's really going on.
Well, there's no money in this field. Everything I've ever done has come out of my pocket. I was never sponsored. I mean, the Trinity case, my God. I mean, I have been going down there. The last time I went there was $700. Just their airfare, you have to tell. It's expensive. So what happens is, since there's no money, everybody wants to keep their own little territory, and they want to keep their own little fame and fortune, and it doesn't help it does not help the field at all. And so my dream, and it's because my archives have just gone down to Rice University in Texas, is to get people together in a university. I mean, if you're worried about, you know, you can't mess around at a university table. I mean, I'm not going to talk to anybody that has no background and just has an opinion. I mean, you can't do that with anthropology, geology, science. So how can you do it with ufology? So if people have the same background or even like other crash research, it would be lovely, totally lovely to get together and say, what did you find out? We found out. For instance, we have two witnesses saw the memory metal. What's her name? Sabrina, that's in the book Trinity, says, when I was 7 years old, we didn't have anything to play with. I'd open up the drawer and there was this long strips of aluminum type metal, she said, and I crunch it up and go back to the way it was. And I thought, whoa, then your grandfather went out there and found that stuff after, because Jose, that was the initial witness, didn't find all that. So he didn't even know that his cousin was playing with that. So it's wonderful to bring the people together and to collect the data. And in the case of Trinity, there are four witnesses. We just found the last one last year, because Sabrina was talking about her cousin who was in the next room that was that had the Christmas tree in his room. And his name was Faustine. It was 15 years old. I said, the Christmas tree was in his room. We didn't know there was somebody else in the house. And she says to me, oh, yeah. And we trimmed the Christmas tree with all this angel hair that was all lit up. No, I'm not saying it's fiber optics. We have no idea what it was, but it was spread on all of the, it was spread all over the mesquite bushes. So here's, they're trimming a Christmas tree. Remember, there's no Kenneth Arnold, there's no Roswell yet, 1945. And so we had to grab that guy. And he didn't know that there was a crash. He didn't know we had written a book. And he told Jacques Vallée, oh yeah. He said, there was a Christmas tree and we had all this angel hair that was all lit up. And he said, it was very irritating. I used to put it down the backs of my colleagues, of my kids in school, when I went to school. And here's pure testimony. And we're saying, well, what the heck was that that came out of the U.S.? I mean, we have none of it left. We tried to look for it. This is 78 years later. So the house had burned down, but we have two people talking about this angel hair that they trimmed the Christmas trees with. Now, whoever's listening here, if you want to hear the details, it's in the Trinity book, because we have to put data in there, not opinion, but data. And those witnesses helped us a lot.
Well, can I ask you about a couple of the people that you talk about in the book, Connecting the Dots? Because there's a lot of names there I recognize, but one I don't recognize is in chapter 3, which is called The Insiders. And is it Ed Fouché? Is that his name?
Ed Fouché. By the way, he came out and talked very, very, he just for a very short time, he was really threatened. Ed Fouché worked in Area 51 in that location where back engineering is happening around S4. And he came up with a book called Alien Rapture, which when they come out with a book, sometimes they do it in the way of fiction instead of, you know, they'll say it's fiction, but it's real. But he really worked there. And he's saying, what he was saying was, and it's very interesting, he said, look, we have developed something called the TR-3B, which looks like a triangle, but it's so incredibly advanced that it doesn't use gas or oil to cover any kind of, you know, that kind of fuel. And he talked about it and how all the people that were working on that, and this is way back, I don't know what the dates are, but I think there's a date on the interview. He told me that. He only spoke for 1 year and he was threatened so badly that he went back underground. And I'm glad you mentioned him. And there's another one, Clark McClellan, ground crew astronaut. When he told me what he told me, that one of the, and Clark McClellan's in this book too, that one of the missions of the space shuttle included an encounter with an ET that had parked his UFO next to the open bay, cargo bay. He even drew pictures of it. I don't remember if I put a picture in the book of what he gave me. He said that the being, and most beings, most 90% of beings are human like us, had a helmet, and that being was floating on top of the cargo bay and spoke to our astronauts. And he saw that, Clark, because he was in the monitoring room. He had worked for NASA for many years as an outside contractor, and he saw it on the monitor. And because he, and I think through other people, saw it, he was fired, and he spent his whole life saying, look, we've had contact. You think we wouldn't? I mean, we go out there. You think we wouldn't have contact if we land on the moon? And people should do more research on what Buzz Aldrin is saying about. And you think if they're doing space shuttle missions, I'm sure none of them are dangerous. However, it's a way of getting off the planet and seeing who's out there.
Do you feel that lots of astronauts have had some kind of sighting or contact and they just keep it quiet?
They have to. I mean, your job, your family, you lose your family, your retirement. Is it worth it? And in the end, I'm going to add another thing because I've been working so hard for 40 years. Nobody believes you. And then they make a big game around it, like it's a joke or something. And it's darn serious. And they criticize and ridicule you. Who wants that? You know, it's people that are sincere, people that have had experiences, people that do great work, have all been crucified by our own, by the way, by our own field, not just the outside world. And so, you know, why would you want to tell about it if it's not going to make any difference? Now, if you ask me the question, do you think more astronauts will come forth? Do you think more credible people will come forth in the next 5 years when it's okay? And Dr. Greer talks about amnesty for all these people, so they won't be, because they kept the secret, so they don't want to go to jail. If you give them amnesty and you don't go after them, my answer to that is absolutely. More people, people better start taking notes. I mean, if they take down the names of everybody that Greer had yesterday, and not only about back engineering, about the possible threats, there was one guy that had been to the South Pole and talked about exotic weapons that we're developing to shoot at them, shoot at the UFOs. I mean, he worked there. It isn't his opinion. He didn't make it up. He worked there. He was a contractor down there, or he was in the military down there. The only people I ever do work with, and it's also in connecting the dots, is firsthand sources. I can't do any work with somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody, you know, or, you know, gossip. You had to be the one to be involved. Otherwise, it's not worth my while.
You've got a chapter that's called Contact and Crop Circles. So what do you make of this whole crop circle thing?
Well, I always say that the people I support the most in the field are Colin Andrews, who's switch from crop circles of consciousness, and he and I have that dialogue. Stephen Greer is one of them, Jacques Vallée, Colin Andrews. In the book on consciousness, the edge of reality, he said, look, in the beginning, what used to happen was that they were mysterious and they were caused by something that we couldn't see. Then they started making them. A group started making them. And he says, but even the making of the circle, the awakening of your mind because of sacred geometry, to think of them making them, it's like if they were ETs, they're making the humans do the work for them. They're creating an image that awakens a consciousness. So they don't have to do it anymore. They get a bunch of circle makers and they go do it. What blew me away when I was talking to Colin about this, and Colin was the biggest crop circle researcher in the UK. He said, Paula, I've talked to several crop circle makers who start one and then they wake up the next morning and it's finished mysteriously. And when he said that, oh my God, you know, then they're like in direct contact with some unknown intelligence. So people need to look at that. And there were two or three incredible crop circles this year near Wilshire, and the only one that's doing any work on it at all, and the only, I think he's the greatest researcher of all, is from Mexico City, and that's Jaime Maussan, and he was there with his crew, but he's got the funding and he's got the crew, and he goes all over the world and gathers data, not only images but data. So there were some this summer. People want to go and look. And go to Terzo Millennio and look under the English part of it, and you'll see the crop circles that Jaime Maussan took photos. Of course, he rents a helicopter and does the whole deal.
I'm in Dorset on the south coast. Wiltshire's the next county over. I should try and keep an eye out and see when new ones show up.
Well, they did, and it's on Facebook, so you can go and just even Google it on where they are. I don't know. The farmer asked, I remember reading underneath, the farmer asked, well, I don't come to the field, you ruin my field. You know, he asked, but if you get a helicopter and you fly over it, you can, it was a long one too. I think it was three circles joined together, it was like a long one.
To me, that's a weird thing that happens in fields with crops and farmers. But another odd thing is the cattle mutilations. What do you think that's happening there?
Well, first of all, as far as crop circles, there are messages from the cosmos and a lot are being given. A lot of messages are being given, if you're aware. The crop cattle mutilations, I can't say anything about that because I didn't research that. That is, I don't make comments on opinion. But since I live in Colorado and a lot of it happened here, the person that did the most research on that is the person that you should be asking, and that's Linda Moulton Howe. She did the most research. So I won't ever comment on anything I never researched because it would be ignorance. I have no idea. I have no idea. I know that maybe, I can only say that maybe there aren't as many as there have been.
You talk about how Colin Andrews has moved over to looking more into consciousness.
Well, I don't know how to explain it to people. The only way I can explain it, Simon, is that all of this, whether it be paranormal phenomena, it's just not UFOs, it's everything. It's messages from the cosmos. It's, you know, in every way people are getting downloads. It's a lot of new material that's coming into the planet. It's an effort to jumpstart humanity from the primitive species it is that's still back in the Cold War right now. I don't know how we're going to get out of this one. I can't believe we got in it again. But to jumpstart humanity to another level, because really, I think whoever's visiting is watching us come from caveman to something that should be a little bit evolved. And the efforts of spiritual people, you know, all spiritual people, and believe it or not, they've all been killed, to say that it's simple. You love nature and God first, and then you love your neighbor. Well, if you love your neighbor, you're not going to be killing him, shooting him, and lording over him. If humanity can come together with some kind of spiritual consciousness, and as far as consciousness, what I'm looking at is being awake and aware. And consciousness means you walk around, you know, you can feel, you feel nature, you feel love, you feel connected to something. And the consciousness that binds, it's like the glue that's binding together the whole planet. It's like a field. And Colin lives on a farm in Connecticut, so it's easy for him to look at this because he's got it all around him. I live in Colorado in the Rocky Mountains. I don't think you can feel consciousness in the middle of New York City when you can't breathe and there's all the police and all the crime. You need to look inside and not outside for the answers. And I think basically the people that are looking inside will find a positive way of connecting with the planet. And I think that if there are ETs, and I think they are for sure, they're waiting for us to really make a jump start. I mean, we're so far behind in evolution. We're right where we were in the 1960s with the Cold War. If we could make a jump start and they could have some hope that we would save the environment, we would help each other, we would be able to connect with a positive view of going out into stars, not shooting them with microwave weapons, they would cooperate with us in some way to help us with this.
And you've got a chapter that's called The Paranormal Factor. You have people there who I think are remote viewers. So how does that connect up with UFOs?
Well, the problem was that I wanted to stay, and I'll tell everybody, I wanted to stay with nuts and bolts because I was scared. I didn't want to go into anything weird. I think a lot of people are like that. And then I began to study Uri Geller. I began to study Stanford Research Institute. I met Russell Targ personally. I've been to the house of Al Putoff, and I realized that they were studying remote viewing because there's your consciousness. that you can throw your consciousness somewhere else and describe a whole other place. And I thought, oh, wow, this is more complicated than I thought, because any kind of communication that you would get from another civilization would not be Chinese, Italian, English. It would be direct thought transfer. And then I started to study why they were examining Uri Geller. And there's two whole chapters on Uri Geller and his involvement with ETs, his involvement with Stanford Research Institute, his involvement with consciousness, his involvement with, he changed the paradigm. Then they had to, what they had to do, they saw that ESP existed. They saw that these things were happening. And I'm going to add another story, Simon. When I talked to Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut from the moon, he was doing these experiments from the moon, and he didn't tell NASA. He did not tell them. So what happened is that he had a group down in Florida, and at a certain time, he would concentrate on something. And I think at that time, there were four shapes or something. And the experiments were 90% accurate. So if you're throwing thoughts from the moon, we have ESP. And so when he came back, Mitchell, who was an engineer, left that whole engineering field and went into consciousness. He went into he started the noetic sciences, and then he hired Dean Radin, who was talking about quantum mechanics, that's saying everything is connected. So they have to find the science to explain what Uri Geller was doing. They had to find the science to explain what Edgar Mitchell was doing. But if you want to sit down and think about this, your thoughts are so powerful, they can be transported from the moon. And your thoughts are so powerful, they can change your reality. So the implication of this research, and I had to put it in my book, Connecting the Dots, I had to do that. It means that we have control over our reality, and that we have this sixth sense, and that there is no beginning and end. I mean, we're talking about looking at our existence in another way. And I had to add that. It was hard because I didn't want to add anything that I could not measure. At that time, I didn't want to get into the paranormal and things that were around Uri Geller. My goodness, I've known him, and he just texted me today, so I'm still friends with him. There's so much weirdness going on. I mean, I just on a personal level, Simon, if I see 1111 anywhere, and I see it everywhere, I know that there's something that either is verifying my path or something that's waking up my consciousness.
Have the remote viewers tried to remote view UFOs?
Yeah, I talked to them. In my book, in this book, Connecting the Dots, is an interview with Ingo Swann, who was the greatest remote viewer ever. He wrote a book called Penetration. He worked with the CIA. And I went to see Ingo Swann. And I said, Ingo, you said there was non-human intelligence on the dark side of the moon. In other words, there was aliens working on the dark side of the moon. He looked at me and he said, yes, also on the light side. And I realized that These guys that have these psychic abilities were being used. They had remote viewed. I talked to Lynn Cannon. He told me he remote viewed inside of a craft. You know, a lot of these people have given testimony voluntarily to the intelligence community about this stuff. And it's all connected. It's not the weirdness, the paranormal, the dimensional phenomena is all connected to the UFO phenomena. It's got to be. It has to be. If there's communications and there's so many contactees in Latin America, and I do most of my work now out of Latin America, the ETs did not go to school to learn Spanish. And they did not go to school to learn English. And they did not go to school to learn Russian. What's happening is you get a thought. It's a direct thought transfer. It is a language. It is a way of communicating that probably we have. I mean, the Native Americans will tell you that they've always known about this. But it is an honest way of communicating, and you can't lie. And you can't not only lie, but you can't, make fun of people or try to you know, do some kind of evil thing and say it's good and so forth. So everybody has ESP. If you're going to have contact, you're going to get contacted in this kind of format. They're not going to take you to a Starbucks and sit you down and say, let's have coffee. You're going to get downloads in your mind, probably in your own voice. And I had to come to the conclusion after 40 years that this is happening. And it's very difficult for somebody that started out working with Blue Book and Dr. J. Allen Hynek the way I did, because we were just like, we were just data collecting. I mean, measure everything, look at the time, you know, all that kind of stuff. And to go from there to where we are today is a long journey.
Do you think Blue Book was a kind of front? And that was just a fake, well, not a fake thing so much, but they said, yeah, we've looked at UFOs. Here's Project Blue Book. But actually, they had another project that was secret where all the really interesting UFO sightings were sent to, and Blue Book didn't even know about them.
There was a lot of sightings in the 1950s and 60s. It was, if you study the early contactees in Giant Rock, and I have, and you have to look at it. This is after the atomic bomb, because most of the messages do not use nuclear. There were so many sightings that the regular people were seeing them that the Air Force had to do something. They had to do something. So they created Blue Book, and they got Allen Hynek aboard. Now, Allen was an amazing astronomer, amazing guy, amazing. He was one of the most patient, wonderful people. I mean, because I, in the beginning, when I started working with him, I would say to him, why are you listening to these crazy stories? And he told me that I needed to learn how to listen, that listening was the most important thing of all. And whether he agreed or not, Allen Hynek changed his view on aliens. On the if you study our book, Trinity, during the Lonnie Zamora case in Socorro, 1964. When the trooper Lonnie Zamora saw the landing, saw the creatures, and they left marks on the ground. So when Allen Hynek got there, he couldn't deny it. It was a credible witness. It was marks on the ground. I mean, the indentations were not made by the state trooper and so forth. So Allen was sincere, but you cannot tell the people the truth in 1964. There is no framework for it. What are you going to tell them anyway? You're going to say, oh, these things are flying around, but we can't protect you. We're the Air Force. We can't protect you. They can't do that. So their Blue Book was data collecting. And by the way, the Maelstrom Air Force Base case, 1969, was a Blue Book. That was part of Blue Book, too. And what that was a huge whitewash, because they took it to the Condon Committee here in Colorado. And Condon right away knew he was going to just throw it all out and say that there was no reason to study UFOs in 1969. So that's when the Air Force got out of the UFO business. Now, you mentioned Project Grudge. Clifford Stowe told me Project Blue Fi and other projects that were secret projects where they needed to collect the data. You have to keep it, even though you can't explain it and you can't protect people from it. So there were these secret projects way back then. And the way they cleaned up Blue Book was to gave it to Condon, and Condon just whitewashed it all. Now, both Jacques Vallée, who was working with Hynek at the time, and for people, you should know Jacques Vallée was a scientist in the Spielberg movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Spielberg jumped in. That talk about consciousness, that raised the consciousness right there. Watching Close Encounters is what started my career. Little did I know I'd be working with Jacques Vallée towards the end of my career and started with Allen Hynek. But the truth is that nobody knows what to do with this stuff. What do you do with it? What, you go and have a press conference and say, UFOs exist, there are occupants from other lands, we don't know what to do. And we certainly can't protect you, because their job, the Air Force and all the militaries, protect the citizens. They don't have to because none of this stuff is hostile. And I agree 100% with Stephen. It's not hostile. Otherwise, they should have done away with us a long time ago. But you, when you have a press conference from the military and they don't know what to do themselves with it, they can't very well tell the truth. And so they have these other projects you don't hear about.
Yeah, and the connecting the dots is well worth looking at. It's fascinating. And that's on Amazon. And I've seen it there on paperback, and you're getting the Kindle version up soon, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And of course, Trinity, which changed all of ufology. I encourage people to read that also. And if you want to know what's the biggest whistleblower of all, conversations with Colonel Corso in 1997 when he told what his involvement was. So yeah, those three things. My website is www.paolaharris.com. And I give master classes where people can come in on Zoom and I give a lecture and then they can ask questions. So may I encourage them to look at that too.
Well, it's been great talking to you. Thanks again for coming back to the podcast.
Thanks, Simon. Good luck.
And that was an interview with Paola Harris about her book, Connecting the Dots, Making Sense of the UFO Phenomena. And if you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you'll need to sign up to Patreon for the extended episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. And when you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called The Past Lives Podcast, and there are over 270 episodes. On The Past Lives Podcast, I look into evidence of the afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. And I also release an extra episode of The Past Lives Podcast every Thursday called Paranormal Stories, and that almost always has UFO information. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And in my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regression. And when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me, and you've signed up to Patreon, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. My Instagram is thepastlivespodcast with an underscore between each word. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review. And be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. The way these craft can maneuver is so beyond our technology. Well, technology that we know about. It's like you were saying, there may be back-engineered craft that we have that are very fast, but the government doesn't want to say to the people, we do not have control of our skies.
Well, you know what? You just said what I just said is so logical that I don't know why people can't figure this out on their own. They have to go to us. You know, it's like, it's so logical. That's why the secret, well, the money is another one. The military.